He could sing anything, even things that, whether they make sense or not, they will sound great. The great Ray Charles, teaming up with Poncho Sanchez, a great conguero, and that's called Marianne. This is called Lead Stories, and I'm called Utrecht Lead. And I'm delighted to be in your company again, because it is Free Your Mind Friday. I have to explain what Free Your Mind Friday is so that people have a working idea of what we do on such days. We reserve Friday to free your mind, and we change the format. The regular format is set aside for this day, and instead we become an open forum, which has one specific purpose in mind, and that is so that listeners calling in will be offering their opinions, and we get to that in a minute, your opinions about something that is in the news, or maybe not even in the news, but something that is significant enough to engage others in talking about. Let's talk now about what's an opinion. An opinion is not you talking off the top of your head. That's not an opinion. An opinion involves you, investing in putting thoughts together about a subject. And once those thoughts are fleshed out, you come to an opinion. You have something to say. It is not important, and I repeat this because it is clear what we all have to do. It is not important whether people agree with you or disagree with you. So don't gear yourself up to twist your opinion this way or that in order to sway people to side with you. Your opinion is your opinion. It's either an informed opinion or it's an uninformed opinion. But in any event, I don't want you to think of this as just a place to get on the air and jabber. If I find that is happening, there'll be the sound of silence. This is to be used appropriately to help you develop your skills of presentation, to help you get better at making your own arguments, whether here on this program or any place else, and to develop the discipline of presenting a point of view. So it is not important. Don't even think about whether people are liking what you say or don't like what you say. Think instead of whether you're making a good case for yourself, following through on a theme, whatever that theme is. Are you doing the job of proving the merit of your argument? And that's it. That's all there is. The time belongs to you today, fully. You call, we see that you call, we take your call, and we hear what you have to say. But please, don't be surprised if you find yourself talking to yourself, because that would suggest that you're way off point, or you have no point at all, or you're just yammering. I am a dedicated enemy of yammering. You have to have a point of view. You have to have a purpose for speaking, and certainly on the air, where lots and lots and lots of people are poised and waiting to hear what you have to say. Okay, so that's what Free Your Mind Friday is. It's your time, and you decide what you want to talk about, but please let it reflect that you have given some thought to presenting this opinion, that you have a reasonable approach that we can follow, and then if you do the job right, we'll know. If not, we'll just turn you off. We don't have time for that. This is very precious time, and it is coming to you free of charge, and you are able to disseminate your points of view so that other people might either enjoy them or be infuriated by them. But the idea is that you make use of your time. Okay, so to get on the air is a very simple thing. You've known this number for quite some time. 888-874-4888. The calls are dealt with, or you put on the air in the order in which we receive these calls, and then we listen to what you have to say. Please be mindful that you don't have the whole program. You know, just kind of give us a compact view of what it is you have to say and get it said in the time that is reasonable. Don't go off the deep end thinking you have all day to talk and make your point. You don't. Okay, so that's it. Though, as they say in Brooklyn, dem's the rules. Dem's the rules. 888-874-4888. Welcome to Talk Back. Whether you're talking or not today, it's good to listen as well. But you get an idea of what the program's aims and objectives are. And I hope you participate. I invite you to. We need this kind of exchange. We need it more than ever because there's so much misinformation and disinformation out there. And what we're looking for is sound information. Maybe you have some sound information to share, and you make clear what your opinion is, what you're going to be talking about. Okay, so that's it. That's all that you need to know to get into the fray at 888-874-4888. What are you going to be telling us today that we should consider? And you have a particular point of view, so we know that. And people may or may not react. You never know. 888-874-4888. Okay, I've done enough advertising, and I don't see any calls coming in yet. And that's another thing. Yes, Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, Incredible Utrice.
Hey, Incredible Harvey, what are you talking about today?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for being such a fantastic gift to all of us throughout the year.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
We love you very much.
I'm going to get a swollen head with this kind of talk.
Well, today I have an idea that I'd like to share with you and your vast listening audience that I call the Sunstar hat. And it's a hat that generates clean, renewable solar electricity. And traditionally, the hat is known as a mortarboard cap that's worn by college students during their graduation ceremony. I'm sure that you know what a mortarboard cap is, but for the people who are unfamiliar with them, they're usually black in color and consist of a skull cap with a flat square board that's affixed to the top of the cap. Additionally, there's a tassel that extends over the edge of the board. And my idea is to cover the mortarboard cap's sun-facing surface with a sheet of lightweight, flexible, thin-film solar cells that are encapsulated in transparent plastic. And lightweight, flexible, thin-film solar cells can be found on Google as well as purchased on sites like Amazon. And gluing these lightweight, thin-film solar cells onto the top of the mortarboard's flat surface would create a wearable solar panel hat. And because many people, especially young people, carry portable electronic devices like cell phones and laptops around with them, a SunStar hat would be ideal to power or recharge many of these electronic devices. And there could be an electric jack hidden inside of the hat's tassel that would be used as a plug-in port for these electronic devices. So SunStar hats don't have to be square in shape. They can also be round, rectangular, triangular, or star-shaped, just about any shape, and a flat and being a flat surface, as well as coming in a variety of colors. And these electricity-generating hats could become a new fashion trend, combining peaceful design and renewable energy production. The solar-powered hats could also help us reduce the burning of fossil fuels, that which would normally be used to recharge our portable electronic devices. So it's time to get star-powered. Let's get solar with SunStar hats. And I want to thank you, Trees.
Thank you very much, Harvey, for that tweak that tells us there are other things other than a mortarboard that it could, a mortarboard could be used for. Thank you. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice, and to all your listeners. Good afternoon to you. Thank you so much. Something very much on my mind today was the passing of the amazing writer and lecturer Bell Hooks, who actually I took a class from many years ago at Yale. And Bell Hooks is known for her, what she would call her radical openness kinds of thoughts on a variety of subjects, but in particular on the concept, and I use that word deliberately, the concept of love, or what we perceive to be love. She has done over 20 published books, and actually this morning I was viewing her on YouTube, where some of her interviews and lectures are. So I just wanted to alert the audience to this amazing woman who really just compelled us to think in many different ways about love and how we love ourselves and each other. And so that's my free of mind Friday note today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
All right, we're hanging in there. Greet you and the Lead Stories and PRN audience a safe and productive weekend.
Thank you.
To echo the sentiments of the last caller, Bill, condolences to Bell Hooks and her family. Even though I disagree with a lot of what she says in regards to masculinity, but, you know, that's neither here or there, because there are some things that I do agree with, but even though she's a great writer, but like I said, there's a lot of disagreements that I have with her. But then I also want to get into the subject of what we talked about yesterday in regards to should people who are not officially citizens be able to vote? And I want to elaborate and kind of stretch out a little bit on my stance on that, because, you know, just like you predicted, you know, we got strong negative reaction towards my opinion about that, which I said that I don't think people who are officially citizens should vote. But and in particular, one caller, Allie, who I very much respect. I actually got a chance to meet Allie in person when you did the lecture at the church in Manhattan. And I always enjoy what she has to say and take away a lot from what she has to say in regards to her opinions. But and I understand, you know, why she's surprised on that. But you have to, well, I want to explain, because I am looking at this from a Chicago perspective. I don't know, you know, there's this term that they always use, the black and brown coalition. And when they say black and brown, that's black people and Latino people, or, you know, people who speak Spanish as a primary or secondary language. So we're talking about, you know, people from Central America, South America, Mexico, and even to a sense Puerto Ricans who are actually technically, you know, U.S. citizens. But I look at it from a Chicago perspective because of the fact that the Black and Brown Coalition here, I don't know how it is in New York or any other cities, but I know here in Chicago it is very much fractured. And Chicago has a history of having a good Black and Brown Coalition, starting with grassroots organizations when the Black Panthers were, you know, were here and Fred Hampton was the leader. You know, they had a strong Black and Brown Coalition with the Young Lords and other grassroots Latino organizations, going all the way up to the Harold Washington administration, who Harold Washington has helped many Latino politicians launch their careers. Two I can think of immediately is Luis Gutierrez and also Chuy Garcia. They are the ones who thank Harold Washington for launching their political careers here in Chicago. But since that time, it just seems like that this coalition has been fractured. And I say this because of the fact that when I say that people who are not technically citizens should not vote, it just seems to me, and I'm looking at it from a perspective of Chicago, that the Latino population, and this is including the Puerto Ricans, who are, like I said, technically citizens of this country, seem to side against Black political interests. And for me, you know, and I know the Black politicians here is also fractured as well. But I look at it from a sense of this is just basically self-preservation when you're talking about the interests of just Black people only. Now, I am not anti-immigration. I don't make this a hard position in regards to I don't think they should ever vote. But at the same time, and I preferenced this yesterday, I just said right now, I don't think that it will be a good time for it. And I understand the arguments against it. You pointed it out. Ali pointed it out. And other people have pointed it out as well. But, you know, it's not a hard position that I have. I just look at it from a Chicago perspective, and this coalition has been fractured, you know, big time here in the city.
Okay. You did some damage control, I see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because like I said, I respect your callers and I respect, you know, everybody who, you know, who speaks against, you know, what I think or my opinion, but you know, it's my opinion, you know, and I may be right, I may be wrong, but you know, it's mine, and I hopefully I have elaborated enough for you to understand, not necessarily agree, but understand where I'm coming from.
And that's the whole point, that we make the effort to understand each other, and in that milieu we can agree to disagree even, mm-hmm. but still continue the dialogue, and that's fantastic. Thank you, Henry. Thank you so much for that. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PR and family. I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend and enjoys the seasonal weather. You know, it's really interesting because the last two callers have literally touched on the comments that I was going to touch on. So very, very briefly. There was a U.S. District Court judge who must have been listening to our show a few months ago when we talked about the settlement that was agreed upon here in the state of New York by the Attorney General James regarding the Sackler family and this settlement that was reached with them. And if you recall, they were only going to be responsible to pay out a $4.5 billion settlement, and that was going to be the end of it. They were going to wash their hands of the damage, And that was done in bankruptcy court. Well, a federal district court judge yesterday threw out that bankruptcy settlement and said, absolutely not. She did not believe that the Sackler family should be shielded from liability. Clearly she indicated that she expects that this decision will be appealed. The Sackler family attorney has said that they intend to appeal this decision, but it lends credibility to our position months.
Hey, how about that? How about that?
Somebody was listening to us. You just don't wash your hands, pay money that is a dent in your pocketbook. You know, it's like us paying, you know, it's like us paying a dollar or $10. This $4.5 billion means absolutely nothing to them. They continue to say they did nothing wrong. They're responsible for nothing. So I expect that this is going to be appealed and appealed and appealed and, you know, may likely end up at the Supreme Court. But the point is that this settlement has been stopped. So far. But the other issue that I want to raise, and Henry just touched on this, and when you asked the question yesterday, I was torn because I have been concerned for some time about this fracture that Henry talked about in that black and brown community. And it's not just in Chicago. It's here in New York. It is here in New York to the detriment of the coalition that should be strong and vibrant and energetic and united in one sole purpose, which is the advancement of social justice for our communities. Here in New York, it is the tension is palpable, and I am really concerned about it. Recently, it was about maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, it was so bad to the point that the Latina delegation headed by Nydia Velazquez, who is one of the in the House of Representatives, one of the highest ranking Latinos in New York, held a press conference and thrashed some black leaders from Brooklyn. I am very concerned about this. You know, there's no question that the Latino population has far surpassed the African-American community. 10 years ago, they were equal. They were about 13% of the population. Well, today, 2021, African-Americans are still 13% of the population. The Latinas are now 21%. And I think there's friction that comes from that. So this whole question about should they be allowed to vote if they're not citizens, I understand all of the issues. I absolutely agree with Ali, who I absolutely love. But there is something about this that is troubling me, and I'm still meditating on it. But my concern is that there is a fracture in our communities that should not be. And, you know, it is my hope that somehow this will be resolved.
Well, what would resolve it, in your opinion?
There has to be a consensus that we are not each other's enemy. There has to be a consensus that the fight, the struggles are identical. Some nuances here, some nuances there. But the struggle is the same. And so we somehow have to figure out whatever the nuances are. You know, sometimes it's language, sometimes it's country of origin. But our ultimate struggle is the same. And that has to be the primary goal, the primary understanding. It's fundamental. And so we cannot get bogged down in what is good for me is not good for you, and what is good for you is not good for me. The struggle is the same.
Well, you will say that, and theoretically it's true. But you kind of glossed over how struggle works. It's about everybody looking out for themselves as well, and looking out for yourself means you have tangible proof that you're winning. You're winning by getting a larger share of whatever the prizes are. African Americans, and I have to say this, I may rattle a few people, they fell down on the job.
Yeah, well.
They thought the struggle was over. And they're not hungry enough for change. There is sporadic action taken when things get beyond the point of tolerance. You have to do something. But the whole idea of struggle, how do you wage a struggle? What's important? Is it only when there are flare-ups? Or do you have a program in which you see the long range, what is happening in the long range, and you start tackling it now together? What has happened is, because there were people receding from the fight, it kind of indicated that the fight was over. And so people went back to their normal ways of doing things. So there's estrangement. And then there is the issue of how do you express power? And you express power by measurement of what goodies you have. What are the goodies you have? And we see that the Latino community has been especially serious about concentrating its activism in these areas of having the goodies: housing, education, healthcare, employment. These are the things that they've been fighting for consistently. Blacks have been fighting for against police brutality, jobs, and other issues. But it's, you know, you pick this and you pick that, and from different points you're tackling the issue, but not a consistent issue. So there's no consistency of effort that people see that they share. And the leadership itself has become fragmented because they've been picked off by the system. They've been co-opted. Let's be very serious about that. That's clear. Some people are selected to get inside, not perhaps the deep inside, but to get inside the circle of influence. And that's enough for them. So they jettison the idea that they have community mandates or any mandate at all. That's what's the problem. The leadership has been hijacked. Thanks so much for calling today, Patricia. Always a pleasure to hear what you have to say. Isabel from Florida, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning or good afternoon, you trees. I've been a long-time listener, first-time caller. And
I'm calling also
on the previous caller's concerns, and I don't understand why, if you are a legal resident, there is no issue with becoming a citizen. You just fill out your application, send your money in, and you get the benefit of being able to vote. So that's what I did. I am a naturalized citizen. And for the longest time, I was only a resident until I decided, well, I wanted to be able to vote and make sure that I was treated as any other normal citizen. And I did that. And it's very simple. It requires you to at least have some knowledge of English, take your civic test where you learn, you know, your branches of government, who the president is, certain things that if you want to become a citizen, you at least want to know. And I don't remember what else. There may be a certain residency period that you have to be a legal resident. But other than that, there is really no, I don't see the problem with legal residents becoming citizens to be able to vote. When you are registered to vote, they go through your documentation, make sure you have your citizenship, your passport, that you're here legally, and it's really not that big deal, you know, to become a citizen, to be able to exercise and have the benefits that legal citizens do. So I don't see the problem with illegals. Yeah, I don't agree that they should be allowed to vote. If you broke the law and you're here illegally, something would have to be done with our immigration to be able to make them legal. I don't know if the period should be longer. I don't know. There's got to be a disincentive for illegal people to come here and not wait their turn. There are a lot of people from other countries that, unfortunately, our legal immigration system is not very kind on them, and they keep waiting and waiting years and years, and they never are able to come over unless they maybe jump over to Mexico and come through that way. So that's my take for today. The other issue that I had yesterday, I tried to call and I couldn't get through, was your question about should a presidential candidate have a test or something to prove they are capable of doing the job? Sure. Everyone should, you know. I don't think Biden would have gotten through if they had done a test. You know, his forgetfulness and his traits that are coming out now would have been known if he had had a cognitive test at that time. So that's my that's my take on this.
Okay.
My opinion.
Thank you very much. Thank you for contributing. We'll see how people react to you.
Thank you.
John Meyer from Harlem, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese.
Hello.
How are you doing today? Well, I just wanted to jump in, first of all, and clarify something, because I think I kind of made a little bit of confusion in my comments, and then, you know, I wanted to call back almost. I would never do that, but I said, oh, tomorrow, thankfully, tomorrow's Free Your Mind Friday, so I can call right back and just clarify that, you know, the activism that I did in regard to immigrant voting rights was for, I guess, what they call, and I'm not very well versed in all the terminology of it, but I believe resident aliens, people who are legally here working. So, you know, the relationship between immigration and illegal immigration, quote unquote, is, you know, another discussion. Like there's a relationship and a discussion to be had there. But to my knowledge, I don't think there's anyone making an initiative saying that, quote unquote, illegal aliens should have the right to vote. So that was just one thing. You know, I mean, we're talking about people who are so-called, like, you know, residents, at least. And I think it's rather civilized for them to have the right to vote. But also, you know, in regard to the conditions in Mexico, you know, I don't know if a lot of people realize, but with the stroke of a pen, with the signing of NAFTA, you know, they nearly started a civil war in Mexico. NAFTA overturns an article in the Mexican Constitution entitling all people to land, going back to Zapata. So that's where the Zapatistas rose up in the southernmost state of Mexico, and they raided the capital, and many of them were not even armed with guns. Some of them just had sticks because they were ready to fight for their very land that they considered the land of their ancestors. So, as in most cases, I feel that, you know, the average American has no clue the extent to which we are protagonists in these various world events, you know, like when 9/11 happened, and the question was, well, why did they want to hurt us? Well, we're protagonists in world affairs, let's put it that way. And it's kind of surprising that something like this, in the case of 9/11, didn't happen sooner. But, you know, the point is, if you look in Mexico, the weapons being used, the weapons that paramilitary groups, that cartel groups have, are U.S. military-issued weapons. So we have to ask, how did all of these U.S. military-issued guns wind up in the hands of bad guys in Mexico who have been able to terrorize entire regions of the country? So I just feel like the whole discussion, you know, is a little bit warped unless we take these historical facts into consideration. And I also just think, you know, this whole notion, it's just very, I don't know how to describe it. It's spiritually wrong. It's fundamentally wrong because there's a whole planet here. We're one human race. And, you know, how come there's no discussion about Europeans returning to Europe, for example? I mean, Europeans aren't indigenous to this country. So I just find it so strange. Like, where do some of these people get off with this self-righteous, you know, you're illegal, you're an alien kind of attitude when you're not in your own ancestral homeland. You're a colonizer to these lands. So I think people of color should know better than to buy into that kind of mindset, because I don't think that mindset is natural to indigenous people.
Okay, well, that was a powerful précis. You shortened it quite a bit, but you said enough that should provoke people to exploring your premise more deeply. It's a provocative idea, a provocative idea. Thank you so much for contributing. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air at 888-874-4888.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
All right. I've been listening to the discussion, and what stands out for me in this whole discussion today that pervades everything as I see it is one thing. And that one thing is the ruling class that runs America. The people do not run it, are doing the main technique that rulers use, and that is to divide and conquer. That is the way that people rule. And what we're hearing from the members of this seminar is around that. If you can divide people up any kind of way you can think of and get them cut up into small pieces, then a fraction of 1% can rule them. If you get the people who you call Latinos against the people you decide to call black, or and then cut them up into all kinds of slices and nationalities and ethnicities and sex differences, male, female, or other. And that is the way you rule people. So what you're seeing here is the secret to domination by the small ruling class that runs America in its interests rather than the interests of the people who live here. And that is why the wealth goes to a small fraction at the top at the expense of people. So divide and conquer, everybody should have that at the head of the list, and that's how the situation we have where the whole country is an empire, and it dominates its people, and it keeps them divided, and that's the way it rules. So you can cut them up any way you want, so you have different groups contending each other. And that is the secret to rulership.
Thank you. Thanks for your contribution today. William from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, William.
Yeah, I'd like to speak on some of the subjects that folks have been talking about. This, the problem with the Hispanic. The Hispanic is a programmed effort to whiten the race, to become Christian, a white Christian, Spanish-speaking nation. It's laid out pretty strongly by Balaguer, who was ex-president of Dominican Republic, in his book, The Island in Reverse. He gets very specific about it. And we see reflections of this in George Zimmerman case, folks, Trayvon Martin, folks will remember the kinds of support, the outpouring of support for Zimmerman was the coming forward out of the shadow, so to speak, of the Hispanic world. We have, that is, American blacks have been the target of a process of attempting to put them back in the box, so to speak. We're a little too much out of, too aggressive. Other cultures, like what's going on in Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, folks are not quite as aggressive about asserting their right to be a part of the society or to exercise their prerogative, as it were. We are, as a people, as one people on the earth, have to resolve these issues as quickly as possible because we're about to lose Mama Earth while we're fooling around with mischief and foolishness. So it behooves us all to understand that human beings need and should be given their right to exist and to prosper. There's much more to be said on the subject, but I think I'll let someone else have the turn. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for contributing. Okay, we have Neil from Connecticut. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm not going to fall in the realm of opinion today. It's my opinion that I'm coming to you straight out of fact. And I want Harvey to pay special attention to what I'm going to say. In simple terms I can. You can supply the energy needs, that's heat and light, of every house, apartment house, industrial park, in the world, totally decentralized, on common seawater. If you're going to ask me how can I back that up with fact, go ahead and ask me.
No, I was not going to ask you at all. I'm waiting to hear you justify your statement.
It's fourth grade science, as old as the 1700s. I need for people to break through their cognitive dissonance and their disbelief. What? You can supply all the energy needs of the planet with water? Yes. Okay, here's some proof. I challenge anyone to call the Toyota company and ask them how much their liquid hydrogen-powered cars cost. I can't afford $65,000, but I can afford to split seawater, which is two molecules of hydrogen and one molecule of oxygen, in a very simple process called electrolysis. It's used for hair removal. A very small electrical charge can make, very inexpensively, make seawater fuel. What? Yes. Hydrogen. It's hydrogen power. It's not water. You're not running your car on water. You're simply splitting the water under your hood no volatility, no storage under pressure, which the liquid hydrogen cars, that liquid hydrogen has to be stored under pressure. That industry would probably have to be, if it took off, would have to be subsidized by the government, just like nuclear. I want to point out to Harvey, too, that solar panels are a very dirty, wasteful process. The product is something he calls clean energy. I'd like to, but I know that the production of the solar panels is very, very harmful to the environment. Back to hydrogen. Run your car on hydrogen power, and the only exhaust is potable water, is water vapor. The implications of this are, number one, to decentralize energy, which the powers that be don't want you to do. So folks have been murdered over this knowledge.
Okay, well, here's the thing, because you just ventured into an area that you can't prove. Secondly, you're advancing a theory or an idea, but you haven't yet said where the idea exists in concrete form. You're just dealing in ideas. Where has any of this that you're talking about, where has it actually been put into use?
Toyota Motor Corporation, the Toyota car makers, will sell you a car right now, maybe 2 years, 3 years ago, that one runs on liquid hydrogen. But it's a very expensive product, and that's how they corner the market and centralize the power. They will sell you a car today, but you have to drive quite a distance to a station that will fuel up your liquid hydrogen car. So that's proven. It's proven technology. Ask NASA, who uses liquid hydrogen in their rocket fuel.
I'm asking you. I'm not asking Toyota. I'm not asking NASA. You are advancing an idea or a theory, and you're telling us while you're doing that, we have to go check. No. You check, and you bring back the information that you have for us to learn a little bit more. But you can't believe that this is enough, that you postulate different ideas, and then you tell people, you go check and see. No.
I'll give you one more example.
Not good
enough. You could go online on eBay and purchase hybrid hydrogen kits to adapt your car. I'm telling you, any car or truck on the planet can be run on seawater. And you can go online and buy it's called HHO dry cell. If anyone wants to take note, you can go on eBay and buy a kit now and have your corner mechanic adapt your vehicle to it, which will increase your energy output and your fuel efficiency anywhere from 25 to 50%, depending on the size of your motor. This is proven.
Fine, but it also increases, if it works at all, it also increases your expenses. Is it a practical application at this time, at the stage where it's at in terms of development? Is it something that can reasonably be done? And then if this catches on, are you not promoting the depletion of seawater?
How many seas do we have? How many quadrillions of gallons of seawater are on the planet? It's the most inexhaustible. It's the most inexhaustible material we have on the planet.
But we do have instances where seas have dried up, haven't we?
They tell me the seas are rising, Utrice.
You see, you can't have it both ways. If you're making an argument, make a cogent argument. But you can't say, well, everybody should just rush to the sea and get your fill of seawater, and then you can have a car operating on next to nothing in terms of expenses.
Next to nothing. You phrased it perfectly. It's almost free. It totally decentralizes energy. Norway has.
There are lots of things that are almost free that are, in the end, not practical.
It's practical.
And that have devastating impact on the environment and on people.
Only exhaust is water vapor. All you got to do is filter the seawater.
Okay, you have an idea. What I would like you to do is you have to go back to the drawing board. You already are in defensive mode without understanding, first of all, what the likely objections are or reservations people have about it, and prepare yourself to answer these questions before they go up. But you're presenting something almost like a salesman. You know, the Ron Popeil attitude, which is, this is going to save you millions of dollars. Yeah, but I don't think I'll live that
I
long.
Think it, make,
you know?
It could be implemented so, tomorrow. Your corner mechanic.
Whatever it is.
Your corner mechanic.
But that's
using,
just you talking. That's just you talking.
Oh, it's
and
just,
you can't be so presumptuous as to believe that you are introducing a brand new idea for which you have total responsibility. You don't. You have been alerted to this idea. You've done some research, I'm sure, and you developed some ideas around it. And you, in your view, it's a perfectly workable idea. But you've gone past that, and you are in a full salesman role. That bothers me.
Yeah, but it's like, how am I going to make money selling people seawater? It's just there. If you live close
you see,
to
there you
farm,
go.
You can just dip your bucket.
How are you going to make money selling people seawater? How do these water companies make money selling mountain water, river water, spring water?
Oh, by paying very small fees to drain the Great Lakes at our expense.
Whatever they do, they have a way of doing it, and that's the point. So the same rationale, the same explanation that you have for that carries over. How do you sell seawater? The seawater idea is not everybody go down to the sea with a bucket.
You truck it into the Midlands on tanker trucks that are run on, guess what, seawater. So you can
fine.
Miles a gallon.
But show me.
Miles a gallon for a product that is
you're,
very
you're
easy.
Talking both as salesman and you're talking as if you have seen this idea work for, your, for yourself. You're thoroughly familiar with it.
I read
and
a study about Norway.
Sounds a little
that
bit suspicious.
It. And I have history also. I've called into
good.
The show and I promoted a little bit of the history. All people had to do is just verify, did this person really exist? That's all they
no,
have
that's
to
not
do.
What all people have to do. People don't have to do a thing.
Well,
except
I'm just introducing
with their lives,
revolutionary idea, I think. Very.
You are attempting to interrupt people's lives with an idea. It's up to you to provide the knowledge and information, not up to people to go research. Because you are directing them to do so.
Promoting this, my speaking about it right now is very dangerous because the oil industry will do anything to prevent this information from coming to the fore. They will murder
fine.
People.
Okay, I understand that. I understand that.
Total decentralization.
But that does not relieve you of the burden, just the same, to have the courage to back up your idea.
I can.
You can't just, you just 40, can't 40 start much. Your own fire and then walk away thinking, well, it wouldn't be so bad, even if it flares up. No, you're responsible. You're promoting an idea that has, as in your own admission, it has major downsides, including death. You shouldn't be so casual to talk about it and promote it. But in any event, we're out of time. Thank you so much for calling. Thank you all for calling and advancing your own ideas. And I appreciate the effort made all the time to get better and better at what you do, because we all benefit when you do the work
you put the energy in to help us understand what it is you're trying to convey so that we, in turn, can benefit from what it is you offer us. And I thank you so much for that. I also thank you for your politeness. That's really big for me, a big deal. Everybody says good afternoon. That's so cute. That's so wonderful. Have a good weekend. Reacquaint yourself with your family just in case you had a little hiccup there. And enjoy and rest yourself over the weekend. And bring people into your life who add dimension to your life. Now forget the others. Just the people who bring good things to you. Hold on to them. And we see each other Monday. Bye-bye.